to a banquet. And there was much reveling, and this existed, this went on for about a period of 6 months, actually, as he took them to the different provinces, showed off all of his glory and all of his reign. And then he threw this big party at the end of all of that. And there was a lot of drinking going on and a lot of reveling. And he decided that he would have his queen, Vashti, come out and show her beauty and put her on display. You gotta understand, when we think of a queen, we think of someone royal in power. This was more like his property. And she was basically his property, along with the hundreds of other concubines that he would have. And he commanded for her to come out and to display her beauty, and she refused to do so. The fact that she was queen did not give her the right to do that. Even the queen could not approach the king unless he summoned her, and if she did, then she stood in danger of being killed, because that was the penalty for approaching the king and his court without being summoned, unless he extended his scepter out to that person, and that would in a way pardon them and allow them to come into his presence. So he was very angry, and he was advised by his advisors that he sought the advice from, and they told him, they said, if you allow this to go on, we're going to have problems with our wives. They're going to think that they can do what they want to. And so they suggested that he depose her, throw her out, which he did. And then he began the search for another queen. Now, the process of this was that throughout his vast empire, and that each province, there would be virgins sought who were very beautiful, who would then be brought against their will. If they were not willing to come, they had to come anyway. And they would be brought to the king, and they would be prepared for several months to be able to be presented to him and to come into him. And then they would be sent to a second house. The first house was the house for those who were being prepared for him. Once he had spent time with them, then they were dismissed to a second house, and they may never see him again unless he specifically requested one of them to come back. And that's the backstory. That's what we see here. So we think of Esther being a queen. That's not a good thing. That's not something that is, there may be some honor to it, but it's really more of a slave, more of a person who is in the king's possession. So these virgins were brought in. And along with them was Esther. Now, Esther's parents had been killed, and they had died, and Mordecai, her cousin, older cousin, took her in to raise her. And so we have this almost paternal relationship that Esther has, that Mordecai has with Esther, as he has basically adopted her, but they are cousins. And it was said of Esther that the young woman was lovely and beautiful, and when her father and mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter. Now, of all the beautiful virgins brought to the king, it was Esther who pleased him most. And she was able to gain his favor. Now, Mordecai would go to the gate of the king's court, and he would pace back and forth, and sometimes he would go to the house of the women where Esther was kept until the king called for her to check on her and make sure that she was okay. In the process, he overheard two of the king's eunuchs who were discussing a plot to kill the king, to overthrow him. And so Mordecai sent word to Esther, who revealed it to the king in Mordecai's name. And thus, after it was checked out, it was found to be true, and it saved the king's life. Haman was an evil person, very evil, and very arrogant, very prideful. He was one of the princes in the province of Ahasuerus, and he had a very good relationship with the king. He could actually come into his court when others could not. He was promoted to a position over all the other princes in the kingdom. And it was decreed by the king that all would bow to Haman. But as Mordecai would pace in front of the women's quarters to check up on Esther, and he was there at the gate, whenever Haman would enter or exit, everyone would bow to him, but Mordecai did not. He refused to bow to Haman. Haman became so incensed against Mordecai. He was so angry, and his anger was of such, though, that it was not sufficient for him to kill Mordecai. He could have easily done that. With a word, he could have had Mordecai's life taken just like that, and nobody would have blinked. But that wasn't good enough for him. He was so angry that Mordecai would show him disrespect, and he wanted to make an example of him. He decided that once he found out that Mordecai was a Jew, that he would eradicate all of the Jews in the empire. Every single one. And so, he went to the king and he gained the king's permission, along with his signet ring, to send orders to each province that all of the Jews on this certain day called Pur, P-U-R, that all of the Jews would be slaughtered. Every one of them, men, women, children, everyone. And they were helpless. They were defenseless before it. They were not allowed to defend themselves. They would simply be like lambs for the slaughter. When Mordecai found out about this, he sent word to Esther. He began to weep and to wail in the city and there at the gates of the king in sackcloth and ashes. And it was told to Esther what Mordecai was doing. And so Esther sent word to Mordecai and sent clothes to him through the eunuch that was the king's eunuch that was her caretaker. And he took the clothes to Mordecai, and Mordecai refused to take them. He sent back word with that eunuch to Esther and told her about the command of Haman and that all the people, all the Jews, would be eradicated, to be killed. And he commanded her to go to the king and plead for the Jews. Now here's Esther in this position, which she relays in Esther chapter 4, verses 10 through 12. And Esther spoke to Hathach and gave him a command for Mordecai. All the king's servants and all the people of the king's provinces know that any man or woman who goes into the inner court of the king who has not been called, he has but one law, put all to death, except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter that he may live. Yet I myself have not been called to go into the king these 30 days. And so they told Mordecai Esther's words. Well, you see the predicament that Esther is in. She is in a position, she is the only one that we know of who is a Jew who would have access to the king. And Mordecai sends word to her, go to the king, let him know, plead for the Jews. Now the king is the one who had issued the command to enable Haman to do this to start with. And Mordecai sends back this answer through Hathach, the eunuch, to Esther. Mordecai told them to answer Esther. Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. Now, Esther has to look within herself and find the courage to go to the king's court, knowing full well that in so doing, that if it displeased him, it would be her death. But she had a responsibility. In essence, Mordecai reminds Esther of this, and this is something that we all need to think about and we all need to remember. There is a cause that is greater than you. And if you must, sacrifice yourself for this cause. If you don't, there will be deliverance. God will serve His purpose. God will fulfill His will. The question is, will I be a part of God's plan? Will God fulfill His will with, through, without, or in spite of me? Esther then sent out a request to Mordecai to send out the word to all of the Jews to fast for her. She said, go gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me, neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise. And so I will go to the king, which is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther commanded him. If I perish, I perish. Let me ask you, child of God, are you so sold on God and His will and His church and His purpose that you would say, if I perish, I perish. If I must lose what I have, so be it. There is a cause that is greater than me, a cause to which I have sacrificed myself when I put on Christ in baptism, and I will do what is in my place to do. Who knows? Maybe you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. And the rest of the story, Haman and his evil plan built a gallows to hang Mordecai on, a gallows that was 75 feet high. It was a major structure. The king couldn't sleep. And so he called for the chronicles, the record of things that had happened to come to him, to be brought to him, and to be read. And there he read of Mordecai saving his life. And he asked, what's been done to reward this person for what he did to save my life? And the answer came back, nothing. And so he sought to reward him. In the meantime, Esther approaches him. He holds his scepter out to her. She pleads for the life of the Jews, they were saved. Haman, who had become the enemy to Mordecai, went to a banquet that Esther was holding for the king and him, thinking that he was going to be honored, at which point she revealed to the king his evil plan and that he was doing this. And the man Mordecai that Haman sought to kill ended up being honored and exalted second to the king in his empire. The king took that signet ring after hanging Haman and his 10 sons and all of those who were following Haman were killed. The enemies of the Jews. And he took that signet ring and he gave it to Mordecai. And he said, send out letters to all of the Jews so that they will stand up and defend themselves. And they did. And they were victorious. Here's something that I think is quite often overlooked that I think is very powerful in the book of Esther in this account. And it's found in Esther 8, verse 17. Then many of the people of the land became Jews. Not only were God's people saved under captivity, but people seeing what had happened decided that they wanted to become a part of God's people, the Jews. You never know. You never know. When you stand up for what is right, when you take responsibility for that moment and that occasion, and you rise to the cause and allow God to use you for His purpose at your sacrifice if necessary, you never know. You never know what good that will do. Not only among the people that you know, but that ripple effect as the people that you impact others, and they impact others, and they impact others, and it could be generations from now that your good deed, that your willingness to stand up, that your desire to serve God selflessly will save souls for generations to come. You see, the good of what you do for God's glory, you may never really know. But that's okay. We don't need to. God does. And that's all that matters. Now, what can we learn from this? First, things are not always what they seem. Esther had been brought into this position, and she had been made a queen, and she was the one person now who was in a position to do something about the slaughter of God's people. You know, the day that she was taken from Mordecai, the day that she was taken from her home, that very well could have been one of the worst days of her life. Maybe second to losing her parents. And here she is in a king's palace against her will. And it may have seemed to her at that moment that this was just the end of the world. God was at work. And you don't know. You don't know the position, maybe something that's happening to you right now, if it isn't right now, it's probably down the road. And when it happens, please remember this. What matters, and ultimately all that matters, is that you glorify God. That you rise to the occasion. That you do what is right. That you make the difference. And who knows? Who knows? But maybe you have been brought to the kingdom for such a time as this. Haman thought that evil would pay. And for a while it did, didn't it? For a while it seemed that things were going his way. But it was his demise. And it may seem, child of God, for a moment, that there's glitter that there's gold. And doing that, making that choice, that is not to God's glory. Not the right thing to do. And it may pay for a while, but it always has consequences. God blesses those who follow Him. You submit yourself to God. I challenge you to pray this prayer, but don't pray it unless you really mean it. And if you do, get ready. But I challenge you to pray it. Father, work your will in my life. I sacrifice myself to you. The things that I seek to do, if they are pleasing to you, bless them. If they are not, defeat them. Defeat me in the choices that I would make that are not to your glory. And then watch them work. And if you truly give yourself to His will, if you truly seek to honor and glorify Him in your life, it will bless you and those around you. God will work His will, but if we do not do His will, we will receive those consequences. So we should look to ourselves to see why God has put us where we are. Maybe you are in a place right now that you don't understand. Maybe you are in a place in your life that it's not where you want to be. And I get it. It hurts. There's pain involved with that. God never promised us that we would be free from pain in life. But if you make the choice to honor and glorify God in your circumstance where you are right now, you will be blessed for it. And more importantly than that, God will be honored and glorified. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 8 through 13. For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, truth. Finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. But all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light, for whatever makes manifest is light. There is a choice to be made. And we live in a world of darkness. We live in a world of sin. Let it never be said of us, children of God, that we chose sin over God. That we chose darkness over light. And let us show that fruit of the Spirit in our life. Goodness and righteousness and truth, finding what is acceptable to the Lord. Why have you come to the kingdom now? What is your purpose here? Child of God, you are not here where you are in life right now. You are not here this morning simply by mere chance. You are not a part of God's kingdom simply by mere chance. There is a purpose for you. Have you found it? Are you looking for it? You see, our circumstance, whatever it is, good or bad, becomes God's glory when we sacrifice ourselves to Him. We think of Jacob, who is running for his life, running away from Esau, his brother, who wanted to kill him. Going to a strange land to people he didn't know, leaving home. Who as a result would bear the sons who became the fathers of the tribes of Israel. We think of Joseph, one of his sons, who was thrown in a pit by his brothers and sold into slavery, lied about, cast into prison, who ended up in Egypt at a time where God needed him to be there, in a place that God had taken him to be able to make a difference when it really mattered. And God used him to save a kingdom and his people. Can you imagine what it would be like in that pit, hearing your brothers talk about killing you? Can you imagine what it would be like being pulled out of that pit, to be sold as a slave by your brothers? Can you imagine what it would be like to be cast into prison for something that you didn't do? The whole time Joseph chose God, every single time he chose God, every time that there was darkness about him, he was filled with a light of a love for God and a sacrifice to him that glorified God, whether it was in the pit, in slavery, in prison, wherever he was. God served his purpose through him to save his people. Moses became a fugitive. He chose to suffer affliction with God's people rather than to enjoy sin for a season in the house of Pharaoh. And through that, God used him to bring his people out of slavery to the promised land. Paul, persecuted so many times, beaten, imprisoned, shipwrecked. And God used him. He wrote most of the New Testament and established many congregations. This was a man who was an enemy of Christ, who gave his life to Christ. This was a man who was a hunter of Christians, who became a Christian and became the hunted. And suffered for it, but he glorified God. I realize that you may be in a place, and it's not of your choosing. I realize that you may be somewhere in life, possibly that you would like for things to be different. Listen, just glorify God where you are. And realize that God can use you greatly wherever you are. And if we must suffer for the cause of Christ, so be it. Praise God that we have been deemed by Him to suffer for Him and glorify Him. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 14 through 16. Therefore, he says, "Awake, you who sleep, arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. See that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil." They were then, they still are. Are you redeeming the time? Let us be about redeeming the time. The Willow Avenue Church of Christ, people of God, shining forth a light into this community throughout the state of Tennessee, the South, the United States, across the seas of the world. Let people know that we are people of God because we are engaged in His work and sacrificing ourselves to His cause. How are you using this time? Don't misunderstand me. I'm not asking how are you using your time. That's another question and it's worth asking. But I'm asking how are you using this time, this place, where you are right now to honor and to glorify God? Don't wait. Don't wait for your circumstances to change. Make a decision that your life will honor Him wherever you are. Colossians chapter 4, verses 5 and 6. Walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, redeeming the time. There it is again. Redeeming the time. All I have is right now. All I have is the present. I don't know what the future holds. But I do know that right here, right now, I have an opportunity to glorify God. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. Child of God, could it be that perhaps you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this, and you are needed in the kingdom for such a time as this, and you can honor and glorify God wherever you are for such a time as this? Child of God, have you given yourself wholly to Him? Can we pray with you for you this morning? There are things that are hurting your relationship with God, sin in your life, apathy, whatever it may be. And you just need the prayers of your brothers and sisters that we can help you. Let us do so. If you're not a child of God, we encourage you to consider the condition of your soul this morning and to realize that to live without God is a life of darkness, and to die without Him is an eternity of darkness. However, wherever you are, whoever you are, whatever you are dealing with in life right now, you take that and you give it to God, and you enjoy the light of His presence in your life. And watch Him transform you. Watch Him take your life and make it so special as you live in His presence. And He prepares a home for you for eternity. Would you come? While together, we stand and sing.